Welcome to Inside the Draft, a weekly preview of the upcoming NFL Draft with insiders from around the country.
Yes, welcome to week two of Inside the Draft here on Colts.com, the Colts Audio Network as well. I'm Matt Taylor. Thanks for coming back. We're inside the Indiana Union Construction Industry Radio Studio. It's a very busy week in the NFL. The start of the NFL free agency period. At the start of the week, we had the legal tampering period. Then on Wednesday, NFL free agency officially began. Deals started to be signed and became official. And for the latest on NFL free agency moves, Colts moves, keep you here for overtime podcasts and the latest on the team with the official Colts podcast, The Last Word. And for the written word on all Colts moves, check out Colts.com. But we're still keeping one eye open on the draft as it's about a month and a half away. The Colts are scheduled as of now to pick in the middle of round one with the 15th overall pick. The Colts have seven picks overall, one in each round coming up in late April. And our guests today on Inside the Draft, they joined us at the NFL Combine earlier this month. Our first insider is longtime NFL front office member Rick Spielman, now a draft analyst for CBS. You can also hear him on the With the First Pick podcast from CBS as well. Spielman started his career as a scout with the Bears and worked his way up to director of pro personnel in Chicago. From there, moved over to the Dolphins, worked his way up to GM for the 2004 season, then spent 16 years with the Vikings and was the GM in Minnesota from 2012 to 2021. So needless to say, Spielman knows what he's looking for in terms of the draft, understands how to put a winning team together and negotiate the salary cap. And Jeffrey Gorman and I chatted with Rick about the depth of the quarterback class, the offensive players at the top of the draft that are likely to push defensive players down the board to the Colts potentially. And he'll also give his thoughts on the Colts with Anthony Richardson coming back for a second season. Then Chris Trapasso, also another draft insider from CBS, joined us at the Combine as well. Myself and J.J. Stankovic chatted with Chris about why the wide receiver depth in this draft is so ample, quarterbacks that he likes coming out of college, and then Anthony Richardson ceiling coming off that shoulder surgery, and what he thinks the Bears will ultimately do with the first overall pick and Justin Fields' future in the NFL. So without further ado, let's go inside the draft. Rick Spielman and Chris Trapasso. We lead off with the former NFL GM, Rick Spielman.
Now from CBS Sports, gentlemen, a fan of yours, number one, because I've watched you work through the years as far as being a general manager in this league. So you're a great guy to talk to. It's Rick Spielman from CBS. And this quarterback situation with four, maybe more going in the first round. Rick, if you could put your GM hat on again and look at these top guys, what do you see in the talent at the quarterback position in the first round?
Yeah, I think there's the big three, the Caleb Williams, the Drake May, and Jane Daniels. What an incredible story coming from where he was at Arizona State to transferring to LSU and then taking a big jump he did this year. So that was fun to watch. You know, if you would have said last year at this time, probably a third or fourth rounder, maybe, and now maybe one of the top three picks in the draft. After that, it's interesting because who's going to be that next tier? Is it Penix Jr.? Is it Bo Nix? The guy that I kind of like and the way he plays, I think he has not reached a ceiling yet is J.J. McCarthy. So I think he may be the next out of those three off the board. But a lot will be dependent on what happens in the interviews and the medicals here this week and then the rest of the pre-draft process.
Rick, as it relates to the Colts, you know Chris Ballard really well. At the end of the season, he talked about, hey, with Anthony Richardson coming back, that's going to help. But overall, our offense needs to be more explosive. They're sitting there at 15. Who are some guys that might be available there to help add some pop to this offense?
Well, I think they better get Michael Pittman Jr. done one way or shape or form. Yeah, you don't want to lose one of your best playmakers, and they were able to get a deal done with Jonathan Taylor last year. But I know Chris, he's usually staying true to the board. And, you know, a lot of people are pegging him potentially taking a corner there at number 15. You know, Juju Brents was hurt last year, but they can use help in the secondary. But if you want to add another receiver, because Alec Pierce probably hasn't developed as much as you would like, maybe they add something because they have cap space as a second-tier free agent. But I think if you hold off and try to look at your draft board and say, okay, here are the four or five corners that are the top corners in this draft. If we wait till we pick in a second round, none of those guys may be there. But there are a very good class of receivers where I think the receivers that you're going to get on Friday can come in and make an impact as well.
Rick Spielman, a longtime talent evaluator for the NFL. Put your GM hat on again for me. You get a memo.
Keep taking it off and you keep putting it back on.
Well, I'd hire you in a minute, I'll tell you that. But I'm saying, like, you see this increase in the salary cap. As a general manager, what's your what is that, like Christmas in July type thing? Or is that like, okay, we got a couple of ways to work this. Is it an exciting time?
No, it gives you relief. So it's like, because you always plan for the worst. And then when you see that the cap came in and it's like a sigh of relief, it is like Christmas, because then it gives you an opportunity to maybe do more things or keep a guy that you didn't think you were going to be able to keep, or all of a sudden that, hey, maybe we can be more active in free agency than we thought. So when you get the news on where the cap ended up and it was higher than most people anticipated, that is kind of like a Christmas in July.
Right. Last one for me is this combine as a whole and the pro days. You just talked about it with Matt. This will continue to go on. For you and your staff, when you were working in a league like this, the importance of this thing for you guys and the future of this thing, pro days can't take over a combine situation like this.
No, because, I mean, you're getting all the medicals. That's the number one thing here. You're getting all the interviews done, which I think is extremely important. And like I said, I hope that if you're healthy and that you come out here and compete. But some guys, like I said, if you're jockeying for a position and guys that showed up and came down to the Senior Bowl, that helped them. You know, it helped a lot of those guys. And sometimes that could be the tiebreaker if you have two guys on your draft board in the same spot that you evaluated during the fall. So I think, you go to the pro days, but there's not all 32 general managers and head coaches at those pro days. So you lose some of that exposure that you get here at the combine.
Rick, one more question on the Colts. Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor combined together, they played two snaps together. But outside of that, there's some marquee free agents within this free agency class, in-house guys that the Colts have to contend with. Assuming the Colts bring back some big names, how do you view this Colts team? How far away are they in terms of competing with the big dogs in the AFC?
Well, like you said earlier, if those two only played two snaps, maybe they are going to be more explosive if they're on the field more than two snaps together. So I think Chris has done a phenomenal job putting some talent, and I think he does a great job as far as homegrown drafting well and then extending those players. I was never a big believer, maybe supplement with some free agents if they're out there. But you're hoping you're hitting well on a draft to extend those guys. And Chris has hit a lot of big, like I said, Michael Pittman's been a difference maker, and hopefully they're going to be able to figure out a way to keep them, you know. And they extended Jonathan Taylor after the drama that everybody went through during training camp and that whole period. So they have some good pieces in place. Now, if Anthony Richardson, which may be, have been a blessing in disguise on him getting to sit and watch instead of getting thrown to the wolves, and understand a little bit more that it's okay to slide in this league. Not that he was not hit in the SEC, but it's a little different hit when these guys get an opportunity to take a shot at you. So, but I think that really could have benefited him the most by sitting and watching how to prepare for games and how Gardner Minshew did it, and just seeing the whole process. Now, you miss them reps, but you got the mental reps and the process down, so it should be easier the second time you go around the track.
To Rick Spielman from CBS, obviously one of the great talent evaluators, longtime GM in this league. Okay, you can officially take the GM hat off, but do me a favor, keep the phone on. Keep the phone on so we can put the GM hat back on.
Yeah, my wife threw it already in the garbage. I don't have a GM hat anymore.
Rick, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
We're on Radio Row, the NFL Combine here on the Colts Audio Network. J.J. Stankovich, I'm Matt Taylor. Sitting across from us right now, our good friend. He makes his trip to Indianapolis on an annual basis. He also sits with us on an annual basis. Our good friend Chris Trapasso from CBS NFL Draft Insider there. Chris, my man, welcome back to town. So this draft class as a whole, what are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What can we look forward to in terms of guys that are going to make a difference next year and the positions that they play?
From a Colts angle, it's really good at wide receiver. We know the guys at the top, Neighbors, Marvin Harrison Jr. It's super deep. So there's a top-end talent at receiver, but it's also second, third, fourth round. There'll be guys that we look back and say, how did they go in the second, third, and fourth round? Edge rusher is really good. Corner is great. Offensive tackle is good. Not quite as good at tight end. We had a great tight end class last year. We don't have that. Running back, I think is at the proper value. Like, there's not a Bijan Robinson or a Saquon Barkley, but there's a lot of, I think, future starters that seemingly don't have a lot of buzz to go crazy early and be third, fourth, fifth rounders, which is where I would mostly pick running backs. So it's and the quarterback spot, not that the Colts necessarily need a quarterback, obviously, but it's a good quarterback class, which could then push down other positions for the Colts in the middle of the first round.
So if the over-under were set at 3.5 quarterbacks off the board when the Colts go on the clock at 15, so that would, I mean, this is kind of the question I've been asking around a lot.
Okay.
So you've got, obviously, Caleb Williams, Drake May. Figure Jaden Daniels probably goes there. So then it comes down to, does J.J. McCarthy go before the Colts get on the clock?
Literally, it was almost, I was like kind of joking last night with someone in the league that I've never gotten a consensus on a player, on what a team will do. It's been about as close to a consensus as I've heard in terms of buzz that J.J. McCarthy will be off the board.
Wow.
That a lot of teams really like the tools, that we didn't see him throw 40 times a game at Michigan, but the tutelage of Jim Harbaugh, the fact that he started a lot of football games, big football games, even outside of the Big Ten, making those three straight college football playoffs. He can move a little bit. He's got a good arm. The intelligence is there. So with teams like the Vikings at 11, the Raiders are there as well. It seems like, I mean, it's still relatively early, over 3.5 quarterbacks before the Colts go on the clock.
And then as the follow-up to that is, what would that potentially push down? Like, if you're looking at this draft as there being, you know, I don't know, I'm just guessing, 10 to 12 elite-level prospects, could that potentially push one of those guys down to the Colts, or is it to the point where those quarterbacks are among those elite-level prospects where the Colts wouldn't get them at 15?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think right in the middle of the first round, we always see, like, at least two or three, like, surprises that are still there. Like, Derwin James went 17 overall. CeeDee Lamb. And it was like
John Allen.
Yeah. That it was surprising that these guys got picked as late as they did after being mocked in the top 10 for 2 or 3 months. I think it will push down corner. I think we'll see a lot of quarterbacks. Offensive tackle is a very good class. I don't know if I said that earlier. Mm-hmm. It's very good, like future, like instant starters that can be future big-time left and right tackles. So corner, and maybe even if the three receivers go off the board, there's going to be the fourth guy, whether that's Roma Dunze, whether that's Brian Thomas Jr., Troy Franklin from Oregon, if he runs really fast, they'll get pushed down the board.
What do you see for the Colts? When you look at their roster in terms of the construction and what they need to kind of get over the top, what kind of draft holes do you peg for the Colts?
Yeah, they're in a really weird position because the job that Shane Steichen did last year, getting the Colts so close to the playoffs with Gardner Minshew, I mean, you guys know, was awesome. Like, it was one of the better coaching jobs in the entire NFL. Having said that, I think there are some pretty big needs on the defensive side. Corner, safety, I think chief among them. I know they picked Juju Brents last year. With Julian Blackman being a free agent, there's one guy that I'll just kind of throw out there. Tyler Newbin.
Minnesota.
From Minnesota, with Gus Bradley as a defensive coordinator, and how much zone they play, how much cover three they play, his experience in Seattle with Earl Thomas being that deep middle of the field free safety. Tyler Newbin is like, he's not Earl Thomas, but he is the best free safety, middle of the field, like played a lot of cover three as that free safety, a lot of ball production. He's someone, and as we always talk about, if he tests well, because we know Chris Ballard has that long history of loving those plus athletes, Tyler Newbin is someone that could be that surprising guy either at 15 or if they move back.
What is the best case scenario for the Colts at 15 as it relates to defense? Because we've heard the consensus is that there's so much top-end talent in the top 10 at the offensive side of the football. Some premium players on defense are going to be available to the Colts. Player-wise, position-wise for the Colts, what's the best-case scenario on defense?
Well, I think you just laid it out that the more quarterbacks, receivers, and offensive tackles, which, I think those are going to be a lot, like almost every pick in the top half of the first round. If Byron Murphy, the interior pass rusher from Texas, is still there at 15, that's a distinct possibility. With DeForest Buckner set to be a free agent next year, he's now into his 30s. Totally different body type, but he's the interior rusher. If Byron Murphy's there, if most, maybe only one corner's off the board, maybe Terrion Arnold or Quinion Mitchell from Toledo, if most of the corners are still available, those two spots, defensive tackle and corner, in terms of, I mean, I just mentioned Tyler Newbin, but I think he could be available later. That would be the best case scenario where they could kind of almost have their, almost the pick of the litter at defensive tackle or at the cornerback spot.
If the Colts were to go offense at 15, Like, let's just say baseline, the Colts are picking someone on the offensive side of the ball. Who could that be, knowing that you're probably not going to get the, you know, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze crowd, you know, of that group?
Well, Matt and I were just talking off air. I'm still a big believer that they could go just any wide receiver. Brian Thomas Jr. Again, pre-workout at the Combine, there is kind of a consensus of where these players are going to be slotted, especially with receiver, and I always say this with corner, kind of that mirror position. The workouts will almost tell you where they will go. If if Brian Thomas Jr. has a freaky workout, we're not going to be mocking them to the Bills at 28. He's not going to go that far. And I'm a big believer that when you have a young quarterback, it's never going to be a bad decision to add more weapons to the roster. And that is not contingent upon if you re-sign Michael Pittman or not. Even if you do re-sign Michael Pittman, you got a great rookie season in the slot from Josh Downs. That's a starter, absolutely. To add another outside perimeter guy would make a lot of sense. And I'm kind of someone that if you have a similar grade on two players and you're like, hey, Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas, and Brian Thomas Jr., you go offense.
Because he catches the ball.
Because he catches the ball and he has a direct impact on your investment, Anthony Richardson from last year, who flashed before he got injured. So I don't think wide receivers off the board either.
What about Brock Bowers?
I was thinking that. I know that the Colts have had this glut of tight ends. We were talking about Jelani Woods off air too. He's someone that if he were available, that could be how it would be sold by Chris Ballard afterward, that best player available. And he's someone that we saw how Sam Laporta played for the Lions and Dalton Kincaid for the Bills. Seems like today's tight ends coming out of college are way more ready to produce in the receiving role right away. And Brock Bowers has looked like a future top half of the first-round pick since he was a freshman. I would not hate that pick at all, again, because he has a direct impact on your quarterback, Anthony Richardson.
Chris Trapasso with us from CBS and CBSSports.com. Last year, you sat in this chair with us, and we talked obviously heavily, I should say, about the quarterbacks and Anthony Richardson. So let's talk about Anthony Richardson now.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, again, it was sad with the shoulder injury that we didn't get to see more of him. Like I said, he flashed. I just love his potential in this offense that is a great mix of, with Shane Steichen, and we talked about it last year, the job that he did, not only with Justin Herbert, but I thought with Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, developing him and just making it, I don't want to disrespect Jalen Hurts, but making it so easy in that breakout year. Like, I watched all of Jalen Hurts in that, 2022 season where he really broke out, and it was bubble screen, RPO, bubble screen, slant. It was of offense that was so conducive to young quarterback development. Now, Jalen Hurts, great runner. The design run game is also part of it, and why I sat right here and said Anthony Richardson is, like, the guy for the Colts. Because you add that in, you say, all right, Anthony, we're going to get your completion percentage up, your confidence up. What he can do that Jalen Hurts can't, that Justin Herbert can a little bit, is throw the deep ball and make those special plays with his legs. So I'm really excited to see him in this very quarterback-friendly offense. And then once in a blue moon, he shows what he can do from the freaky specimen side with his arm and just obviously, you know, the elite athleticism.
If I recall last year when we had you on here, you were one of the first people, like before Anthony even worked out over there at Lucas Oil Stadium, to have him mocked to the Colts at 4. That, you know, that was pretty high for him.
I think I had the Colts trading up to 1 for him, actually, because I thought it was a perfect
fit. And come to
find
out, I mean, JJ can speak to this as well. Come to find out after the draft, I think, based on what you heard and some of the inferences, had the Colts picked at 1, hypothetically, I think they targeted Anthony Richardson all along.
And I think, you know, the team picking at 1 probably was thinking about Anthony, too. They obviously didn't take him, but that was a...
Isn't it crazy how that looks 1 year out? Not to just rag on Bryce Young, but you guys are around him. You see Anthony Richardson. I remember witnessing him here at the Combine, and it was like, that's a tight end. Mm-hmm. And Bryce Young looks like a slot corner. So that, to me, again, I don't want to totally bash him, but I think from a physical perspective, when you're trying to say, what do the other elite quarterbacks look like? They look more like Anthony Richardson than Bryce Young.
What happened with Bryce Young?
The entire Carolina setup with the offensive line wasn't great. The receivers had, like, they were one of the worst separation groups in the entire league. But I do think the weaknesses for Bryce Young, and I'm not someone that just knocks him for his size alone, but I thought at, like, whatever he was, like 6 foot, 185 pounds, those type of humans usually don't have great arms. And Bryce Young's arm, compared to even C.J. Stroud, I don't think was anywhere close. Of course, nowhere in the same stratosphere as Anthony Richardson. So to make those tight window throws, even from the SEC to the NFL, is a totally different ballgame. And there were times where early in the season they lost to the Falcons, and Jesse Bates had two interceptions right over the middle. Yeah. And it was like the dig route was there. Bryce Young saw it. He anticipated it. But Jesse Bates, being like an all-pro caliber safety, was able to close that window. So it, to me, his lack of arm strength and the fact that he's a SEC, like for the SEC, a good athlete, but not for the NFL, to run away from guys, took a lot of sacks. Some of that was on his offensive line, but you need to be a Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes, an Anthony Richardson type to be able to elude defenders on a consistent basis, and I don't think Bryce Young is that type.
I'm curious about just how you put together mock drafts as someone whose job it is to produce those.
Yeah.
Is there a point in the offseason where you, like, do you start off kind of like exploring scenarios of like, if this team does this, I'll do this with this team, and then it kind of goes from there? Is there a point in the offseason where you feel like there is enough information for this to be a like legit prediction of what I don't think will happen if this happens, but this is what I think is going to happen for all 32 teams, if that makes sense?
There's like three layers to it. Early on, that is what it is. It's exploring scenarios. Oh, what if the Bears trade out?
And right.
You kind of see like the ripple effects. Now, the second point is after the combine, like I mentioned, you kind of get a range like, oh, this wide receiver only ran 4.53. He's not going in the top 20. And then after, obviously, free agency, where we could say, hey, the Colts need a safety. They need a corner. If they sign a big ticket item at those positions, they're probably not going there in the first round. So after free agency, I would say by maybe the second wave of free agency, like mid to late March, that's when, which is only about a month away from the draft, obviously, those mock drafts are more like predictions of what I think will happen. But you still have, for as many as I put out from CBS that they have me do, you still have to kind of run through the different scenarios of,
right,
because you don't know which teams like which quarterbacks, and those usually have the biggest ripple effects on the first round.
Let's get into Time Machine, right? Let's, you know, we're Doc Brown. Let's get in the DeLorean. Let's go. Let's fast forward to 2028. Let's punch it in.
Okay.
Who's going to be proven right? Is Justin Fields going to be proven right, or are the Bears potentially going to be proven right with going in a different direction and drafting first overall?
For as much as I liked Justin Fields coming out and was surprised that he lasted as long as he did in the first round because of his athleticism, I think the Bears, they kind of have lucked into a scenario where they're probably going to be proven right, because I think Caleb Williams is the real deal. And even if in for some way, if they trade out again of the number one overall pick, which would be unprecedented, and they land Drake May, I think they would be fine with that. So I'm not saying that I think Justin Fields is just totally washed and is done as an NFL quarterback. But I think we'll, in 2028, look and say, the Bears got some trade like assets back for Justin Fields, but they ultimately got a better quarterback. They upgraded at that position.
One final one for me.
Sure.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is the consensus number one, you know, the best wide receiver within this draft class. What are we talking right away? First and second year. Instant impact guy in terms of experience, production, 1,000 yards. I mean, what are we looking at in terms of ceiling early on for him?
Yeah, so I compare him, and I know this is lofty, but it is Marvin Harrison Jr. He's like a light version of Julio Jones to me. And if you look at Julio Jones' rookie season, he had Roddy White there in Atlanta. I think he had like 900 yards. And that was at the time where rookie wide receivers were not really producing out of the gate like they do today. So I think with Marvin Harrison Jr., with the production that we've seen from Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, wide receivers right away, I totally think, I mean, of course it depends on the quarterback, you know, the team situation, but he has the, not only the athleticism and the size, but the route running ability to get open and run the entire route tree. We always hear that. Not a lot of receivers are doing that today coming out of college, even the good ones,
right?
To be that 1,000-yard guy in year one.
Do we have to really think about the possibility of Marvin Harrison Jr. going to the Patriots?
I think so, but I also, I mean, we're talking about different scenarios with mock drafts. I would be slightly surprised if the new regime there, turning the chapter from Bill Belichick, is sitting there at three and they're just like, we're going to pass on all the quarterbacks. But Marvin Harrison Jr. is that type at, to me, the game's second most important position that might be worth saying, hey, maybe we're going to just wait on the quarterback.
Okay, will the third overall pick be a quarterback regardless of who's making that pick?
My most recent mock draft, I did have the Vikings trading up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be, because for as much as I like Marvin Harrison, he's a blue chip prospect all the way. Mm-hmm. If you're the Patriots and you're like, all right, we can just draft Marvin Harrison Jr., or we can get like next year's first, a second, a third next year. What a huge trade compensation. I think given where the Patriots are organizationally and roster-wise, for as good as Marvin Harrison is, he's one player. There's not just Marvin Harrison Jr. away from competing in what has become a super loaded AFC.
Yeah, Chris Trapasso right there from CBS. What does the rest of your stay in Indianapolis look like? What's on the docket here?
Yeah, trying to do as many of these interviews as I can with teams, with other organizations. Yep. And as you guys know, it's all about the networking at night. Like, go out and you have a couple drinks, but not too many, so you don't make
nurse
a fool
those light beers, baby.
Nurse the light beers, and just try to talk to as many people. And what's great is that normally if I go to the bar with my friends, they like football, but not to the level that I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Being here, everywhere you
turn.
Dude,
let's talk about taxes or something.
Let's talk about offensive tackles for 30 minutes at the bar.
Yeah,
so almost everyone is
geeking
as
out.
Big of a football nerd as I am.
When does it all die down? Like 2 in the morning, that late?
Yes.
It is that late. Because I have 2 young kids, I've kind of become an early bird. So I'm not like the whole week I can't rage until 2 a.m. Last night I was out a little bit late, but I kind of start to go to bed a little earlier as the week progresses.
Yeah, I used to do it when I was in Chicago as outside media. I would be out at Prime until 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I came here. I'm internal, and I have kids. So I try not to do that.
Same.
It's the Family Man Podcast here with Chris Trapasso. He'll be in bed by 10:30 with steak in his belly, feeling good, ready to attack the rest of the week here in the Circle City. Chris, always a pleasure. Enjoy your stuff, man, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.